with the whisper.
He should have been hauled off, I reckon, about 10 balls before that. He actually showed a real lack of intent to actually even try and score.
But no one at Cricket Australia, and even now, their past chairman just squabbling with current chairman. It's such a messy situation that I think should have been addressed 3 years ago.
If he just says, this is the situation, I'm resigning from captain, well, let's do the week or 2 weeks of turmoil and then we can move on with the cricket.
I said, oh, Dennis, let's let you know that it's, I think it's time. I'm going to pull the pin and retire. He paused for a bit. He looked at me and says, geez, I think you made the right call.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Thursday Forum.
Daniel Harford, hello to you. Good morning.
Gareth Hall, lovely to be with you, sir. God, you're looking good.
I'm giving 10 tickets away too to Sipping Classic Day at Caulfield on Saturday afternoon. Best text messages through throughout the morning, and also we'll have a couple of questions. First one to ring through on this number, 1300 652 927. Sipping Classic Day should be a beauty on Saturday, Daniel.
I'm looking forward to it. Sipping was one of my favourite horses. I fell in love with him. Yep. When he was doing what he was doing out there at Sandown in traditional markets. But of course, this time it's around the Caulfield track for the Sipping Classic Day, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. The timing's interesting. I heard Matty Stewart speak about that. I've read the article about that. What's your take on the timing of the Sipping Classic?
I don't mind it. I think they've done well. I think there's a place for a big race meeting on this day. I don't think we could go any further into, say, December, because I think people in December are starting to think about saving money for Christmas and planning holidays, and they're just in a different mindset than, say, November when it comes to racing. So I think this is a perfect date to wrap up the spring carnival. And, I like it. I like it like that about this time,
well,
Daniel. Are you a fan?
I quite like the fact that it keeps going. I mean, we've still got great racing a little bit deeper into the season, Gareth. I must admit that normally it's all sort of wrapped up by now. We get to some of the country cups going,
yep,
and we look forward to them. But the Metro stuff had been wrapped up. But I quite like the fact that there's another one still to be had.
So would you push the Spring Carnival will never get pushed back like the Caulfield Cup or the Cox Plate, because unless they change the format of the Spring Carnival, because the VRC will never move from November and that first Tuesday in November. So you have to reinvent, say, some of the other races like they have with the Sipping Classic. So I think it works okay right now. And you can't push too far back, because then you run into the autumn. So you'd have to
That would be pushing it a long way back if you're running into the autumn.
Correct.
But I get what you're saying, yes.
So you'd have to push everything back here. So the autumn would have
3 months.
The autumn would have to push back, and then the winter months, that have to, not the winter months wouldn't change, but the racing carnival, say, in Brisbane might have to change. So, but with the way that the weather is these days, it looks like the seasons are changing anyway, Daniel.
Well, I've had a theory, Gareth, and I don't know if it's getting stronger or not, my theory, but I've had a theory that the seasons need to be pushed back a month. The start dates of all the seasons need to be pushed back a month.
Yep.
Just the way the weather is. Winter should start in July.
Yes.
And you say summer at the January, February, March. So almost chronologically from the start of the year. Push summer back from December to January. Push autumn back from whatever it is, March to April, and push them all back a month for the start dates, because the weather's changed, mate. I'm telling you, the weather's changed.
I think you're onto something there, Daniel, and that can be an exclusive on the Thursday Forum today, that Daniel Harford believes it's time to push the seasons back a month. I totally agree. Talking about seasons, the draft happened there last night. Well, the opening night anyway. Daniel, are you a fan of the draft?
Well, I am a fan of the draft. I've lived through it, and it gave me my opportunity to play AFL footy, so I'm certainly a fan of the draft. In terms of as a spectacle, I don't know how engaged I am from a fan perspective. Correct. I quite like seeing what's happening, but I don't need to be given every piece of information about every kid that's ever played the game. But I do like to see, when it's all done, who's gone where and what people are saying about them.
Are people guessing at the moment how good these players are? Or do you think do you think now with the way that the testing's done and the recruiters watching these footballers that you get a pretty good hand on the players that you think can make it or not?
I've asked this question to the Carlton recruiters. My office is not too far from theirs at Carlton HQ at Icon Park. And I've had this discussion with them. I've asked them, is there a is the last couple of years there's a bit more pot luck than good science and good data and good research. And they guarantee me that the homework that they've done since they've first laid eyes on a lot of these kids is enough to get them to understand whether or not they'll be able to fall into an AFL program or get into an AFL program and develop. So they are assured that anything that they do tonight or tomorrow in the rookie draft or last night in the first round is absolutely warranted, and they are very confident they can get the right results with the players they pick.
Is it a luck of the draw for some of these players as well? And this, I know that the professionalism of football clubs have changed over the last 20 years especially. But is it like a little bit of a horse that gets picked up by a trainer, like a yearling? You can go to a really good trainer, or you can go to a trainer that might be out of form a little bit. And that, if you know what I mean. So that can be the difference of you making it or not.
Yeah, I mean, if you're any good, you should be able to find your way to make it to a degree, to a level. Now, there are teams and clubs that have much better development programs, or you suit that program better, and your horse analogy is probably pretty good. Some trainers might have a way with certain styles of horses than others, and no different to footy clubs where they'd have a way to develop certain style of players or certain category of players works under their system a bit better. So I think there is an element of, there's a little element of luck, but if you get to this point where you're getting drafted, there's enough ability, you've been identified as having enough ability to play the game, then it's on you a bit too. You can't just be blaming what's happening inside the walls of your footy club when you get there. You've got to put your efforts and your mind into being the best player you can be as well. So there's an element of ownership and accountability that has to fall upon the player, even though the clubs take all that responsibility publicly.
Are you a fan of the father and son?
They love the father, son. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Whitey was talking this morning about a brother-brother situation, and I'm not sure about the brother-brother situation.
No. I think sometimes that you do need to be careful in a way, because it is a national competition. If you've got, say, that the Hawthorn Football Club, Shane Crawford, Daniel Harford, you can help me out with a few of the names that played together.
Johnny Barker,
Trent Crowe,
etc. Sam Mitchell, Luke Hodge.
Sam Mitchell. They've all had superstar kids. Like, you've all become reduced choice in a way. And just deliver the goods, and then, is that fair on the other teams? Or is it a case where the AFL have put in place that you can't do that because you don't have enough points to get everyone?
Well, that's right. So there is a price you pay. Back in the old days, it was a third-round pick for a father-son, and it was money for jam. And then if you had two in the year, it was third and fourth round. Like, it was an easy system. Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, you think of all the players that get selected in drafts over the years, very few are father-son. Now, we look at of recent years. I mean, Geelong and the Bulldogs are the two teams that stand out in terms of access to really good talent into their programs through father-son programs. So, but that's it, really. And that's been over a fair period of time. And now you've got to pay the price. You've got to find a way to actually get them into your club. Yeah. So you actually, if they're really good and you're a good team, like we've seen with the Bulldogs and Sam Darcy, like they've had to manipulate every part of their draft and trade strategy to find enough points to get this selection at the top of the draft so that this elite young talent can come in. So that's affected the back end of their draft. So they'll miss out on players on the back of that. So it's a bit of an even Stevens type situation, but I think it does keep the romance alive for footy fans. And in the end, Gareth, and you know this as well as anyone, the connection you have with your footy club is for your footy club. It's not necessarily a player, but your footy club and the people that make up the history of your footy club. And that includes past players who have been greats of your club. And that's, you get the opportunity to be a father-son opportunity through that situation. So I think it's a lovely thing. And no further, we don't want brother, cousin, no. Grandfather, grandson, all that sort of stuff. We don't need that, but I think it's a nice thing.
But there's a loyalty there. They'll trade you as quick as they recruit. Well,
exactly
you.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, sure. He was a favourite son at Collingwood. They moved him on to the Giants, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. They shoved him out pretty quick. Yeah. But that's footy clubs. That's the business, isn't it?
I'm just watching now in the RSN 927 studios, college basketball. And I know it's a different landscape, American sport, compared to our sport. Do you think we need to do a little bit more in showcasing these younger players, having a national telecast of the under 18 competition, so we can get to associate ourselves with these younger players before the draft happens?
Well, I'm sure there'd be a market for that to a degree, but where does it fit? in your sporting viewing, where does it fit? Because chances are it's going to be happening through a through an AFL men's season, where you've got your local footy, you've got your AFL footy, and then you all of a sudden you've got another level of footy and layer of competition that you perhaps want to engage in. My question would be, how many people would watch consistently these kids play? I'm sure there'd be a hardcore element, absolutely, but I can't see the general footy fan spending too much time watching underage footy. It hasn't been built into our culture like it has over there in the States. And that college system is a well-held traditional system. We don't have that. And I don't think we've got the time for it anymore.
I guess those college players, most of them aren't going into their professional sporting codes like the NFL or the NBA until they're like their early 20s, aren't they? Some of them. So unless we maybe change the draft day, we will probably be the same here in Australia. It just won't be in our culture. I agree with you there, Daniel. 1047-0416-905052 to join our conversation. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk some racing and some cricket. I wonder who Daniel Harford believes should be our next captain of the Australian Test side. Gareth Hall and Daniel Harford with you for the Thursday Forum on this Thursday morning. Harford, just want to have a quick chat about your responsibilities with the Carlton W side. And the COVID situation. Now, there was another positive in the NRL there recently, and it was a Manly Seagulls player. Victoria represented or just reached 90% of double vaccinations with their community today, which is an amazing effort. But is your team there at Carlton put in place a situation where your players do get COVID throughout the season? Because it's probably nearly a short price favourite that will happen to clubs. If not all clubs.
Yeah. No doubt. Well, it's going to be just a part of our season, our world going forward, Gareth. So people are going to get it. We saw yesterday Brian Cook was announced the CEO has contracted the virus. So you have to have your protocols in place for that. But, we've got plans in place for players to miss games through the year. Now, we don't want that to happen, clearly, but the reality is that's going to be our life, our lot in the AFLW season. There will be a player here or there and maybe a close contact or two that will have to sit out a game or two depending on their level of engagement in the virus. And we have to move on. And we have to find a way to move past that. There's not much you can do apart from just have them out and just bring another player in there, really. There's not a lot of contingencies you need to have. It's quarantine them, keep them safe and well and healthy, which is the most important part. And then find another player to take their spot. There's no other options, really. You've got to keep moving forward.
So what happens if Daniel Harford gets COVID or one of your best players? Do they have to miss, sit out for 2 weeks?
So it's a 14-day, at this stage, sorry, it's a 10-day. I think it's a 10-day quarantine period now. So, depending on the timing of your infection or assessment of your infection, you might miss two games. And then, depending on how bad you've been hit and the damage it's done or the impact it's had on your health and physical well-being, you might miss another one or two on the back of that. So you might see players missing three games, possibly four games, in an AFLW season of 10 games, which is a massive chunk of the season, clearly.
I think this is going to be more of a headache in a way for football clubs than, say, the previous years because they were all in their little bit of a bubble there last year. But we've seen in the NBA and the NFL that it can cause havoc with your side. We even had a situation when they opened up in the NFL last year that an assistant coach was they tried to get him on the list, but they couldn't for one of the NFL sides. So he could be the quarterback for the game. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how we handle it in Australia with, this is our first real season where we've had our communities opened up and we'll see how we go. With the Australian captain, do you think that, is it Patrick Cummins or is it Steve Smith for you? It's out of those two. Both of those players have been interviewed by Cricket Australia. An announcement should be made as early as tomorrow, Daniel.
Well, if there wasn't a history, it's Steve Smith by the length of the straight, isn't it? That's a pretty straightforward outcome. But because there is the history and because we find ourselves in this situation due to another scandal, I don't think they have any chance but to make Pat Cummins the captain and have Steve Smith as his deputy guiding him and helping him throughout the series. Because there's even a suggestion, Gareth, and I'm not sure if Mark Waugh touched on this with you yesterday or not.
Yes.
Certainly wasn't referenced in the paper.
It was,
No, disappointing you didn't get a bit of love there, by the way, because you're very good. That Pat Cummins might not even play all five tests because of the wear and tear on his body from a bowling perspective. So he's going to need to have someone as his deputy that's fully capable of stepping in and playing that role. Steve Smith's the natural guy for that, isn't he? Are there any other options?
No, I reckon you make a really good point there. So the Australian fast bowlers were criticised that they didn't take enough wickets against India, but they were a little tired. Now, George Bailey said in our interview when he broke that story regarding Marcus Harris there the other day, that he believed that it wasn't all of the bowler's fault that they weren't getting those 20 wickets. He said that the fieldsman dropped some simple catches, and if they made the most of their opportunity, it would have been a different story for our bowlers. But five tests, hot conditions, quick backups in some of those test matches. If Patrick Cummins is quiet, you can't just rest the test captain. So I've got an inkling that, and my beloved producer, Matty Neffert, he pointed this out to me as well today, and I agree with him now. I'll give him credit. I think Steve Smith is nearly a short price favourite in front of Patrick Cummins to be our next captain, because you can't rest your fast bowlers then. If Patrick Cummins is captain, can you really?
Well, you can. You just give up the captaincy to the vice captain for that test.
Yeah, but you can't do that, can you?
Well, yeah, you probably can.
Yeah.
You probably can. And this is what they've been campaigning for a couple of years, that they maybe need to have more of a team element in their fast bowling stocks rather than just the traditional three quicks and a spinner. And then you've got Cameron Green, of course, who bowls his fast mediums. So maybe you can. I don't know. I mean, the weather will be interesting, because I think if we don't go, if it doesn't get too hot and we have short periods of, well, if England aren't batting very well and they're not going very well in the series, and they're only going 3.5 days, 4 days test, they might not get tired, these fast bowlers. They might get through okay and unscathed. So I think the weather and the English capabilities with the bat are going to play a part in this conversation as well.
So Khawaja and Travis Head both didn't make the opportunities that they had on offer in that recent Shield match between South Australia and Queensland. So that's the decision George Bailey has to make regarding who plays number five for Australia. But it was interesting to hear Mark Waugh on this show, RSN Central, yesterday, saying that he has a problem with George Bailey not making that decision as the chairman of selectors regarding the decision on Tim Payne. If there's a one-all vote between Justin Langer and Tony Dominate, he's not willing to make that decision because of his mateship and he's got business interests with Tim Payne. But Mark Waugh's argument is that, well, if you're the chairman of selectors, you can't be in that situation. You need to make some tough choices. Are you on Mark Waugh's side here, or are you on George Bailey's side here?
I'm 100% on Mark Waugh's side here. If you're in the position of responsibility like George Bailey is as chairman of selectors, your job is to make a call when it needs to be made. If it comes to the fitty-fitty call, it's your job to make the decisive call. That's his entire role, isn't it? He's effectively judge, jury, and executioner in all these sort of matters. It's like saying the CEO of a footy club, say, in my world, the coach is going like a bastard and the board's split on what they're going to do with him. Well, your job as a CEO is to run the business. You run the football program and the business. And if you need to make the call and sit that coach down and say, you know what, it's not working, then that's your job. Sometimes they're unsavoury, sometimes they're uncomfortable, but that's the role. And I think Mark Waugh, on your program, RSN Central, which wasn't referred to in the paper today, which is disappointing.
But
it's probably Glenn McFarlane's problem.
Yes.
I think it's spot on.
And there's people in those top jobs, CEOs, football managers, AFL coaches, AFLW coaches, that would be put in that place a lot. It's George Bailey wouldn't be the only person in a role like this that has to make tough decisions on his mates or his friends.
No, exactly right. And you take on a role with all the responsibilities that come with it, and that's part of the national selection panel, chairman of selectors role. It's pretty straightforward. But as I said to Whitey this morning on this, Gareth, this is not a conversation that Tim is going to be not expecting anyway in the short term. He was always talking about this series possibly being his last anyway. So his position in this team has always had a bit of a use-by date on it, even by his own admission. So this is not something that he could sit there and go, I can't believe you've done this to me. It's not as if he's 26 or he's 32 and he's just come into the team. He's come in, he's done a terrific job leading the program, getting back from that disaster in South Africa. And he knew, like everyone else in cricket, that at some stage soon, very soon, he would be out of the test team. It might be a bit sooner than he hoped on the back of all this, but probably not.
I think he'd nearly play. I think he plays. If you put a market, who will be the wicket keeper for Australia in that first test, I think Tim Payne would be the favourite.
Well, the only problem with that, and I tend to agree, the only problem with that would be whether or not he's physically capable of doing that after the injury to his neck, the surgery, recovery and all that sort of stuff. And he hasn't played a lot of cricket. He's ventured into that second 11 game through the week. He's playing the one day game tomorrow before he heads into camp. So whether or not he's got the physical condition to do it, and only he and the high-performance staff will know that.
What about that? Just quickly on a Sheffield Shield match there yesterday, the WA were clearly the best side in the first innings against Tasmania, and then they declared so they could get a result for that on that final day against Tassie. And Tassie chased down 315, Big Bash style, to get over WA.
Magnificent. Wasn't that great?
That's great for cricket.
My word of this, you want to get results.
Do you? What about if you're a WA fan and you miss out on playing in the Shield final because of that decision?
Oh, I don't think that'll be a huge issue for WA cricket fans. I don't think there's that many that would be too upset about it.
No.
And the grand scheme of things. Well, cricket, domestic cricket, you need to play to win, I reckon. And it's a bit different to Test cricket. I know they play to win there as well, but sometimes they're happy with a draw. Yep. In domestic cricket, you've got to teach players to go out there and try and win the game. Come hell or high water, barring weather, we should be trying to get a result every match.
Now, this has got nothing. I just want to get this on the record. This has got nothing to do with what I'm about to say with this match between WA and Tassie.
What's going on?
No, this has got nothing to do with it. But one of the great test matches of the last 20 years was when Hamzy Cronier declared early against England to get a result. Everyone thought, geez, Hamzy, that was great for cricket, mate. What a sensation you are. You've done extremely well. Hats off to you. You put the game before your country. You put the game before a draw, and then 10 years' time, we work out Onzi had other motivations for that early decoration, basically.
Well, but as I said, international level is a bit different.
Yeah.
And that, again, is another layer that we probably don't want to have associated with the game too much, that situation with Hunsie. But international cricket's different because you play to win series and all that sort of stuff. And that's a different conversation. But domestic cricket, where it's a round-by-round, home and away type fixture like we have in other sports, you should play to win every single time. You should try and get a result, my opinion.
Now, we'll talk about a bit of the soccer that was played overnight with the Champions League. But before I say goodbye, I was so happy to see a couple of young apprentices from Tasmania there last night, in Taya Stalker and Taylor Johnston, outride their 4 kilo claim in Tassie. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this story, Daniel, but about 9 weeks ago, Tasmanian Jockeys Association, which is, of course, led by Kevin Ring, said that these two young ladies, I think Kevin was given some advice or recommendations by a couple of senior jockeys, weren't fit to compete at a race meeting. So these two poor young girls, and a few of the jockeys boycotted, or they went on strike, basically, for this meeting at Devonport. So you just have to think, they're about to start off their career. You get drafted, to put into a footy analogy. So you get drafted to the Hawthorn Football Club, and Daniel Harford and Shane Crawford, they say, oh, what are you doing here, mate? You're not quite good enough to be playing AFL. I don't know. I'm not. Hey, Jeansy or whoever, it was Swabby, I'm not training today. If Gareth's turned up here to play football, is not good enough. So these poor two young girls had to go through all of that. So you wonder what that would do for them mentally before they started off their race riding career. Anyway, they got given the green light to ride. Stephen Maskell gave him the tick of approval, who looks after the apprentices. He's one of the great jockeys that Tassie's ever produced. So you would think that if it was good enough for him to give them the tick, then they should have been allowed to ride. But to Taya and Taylor's, to their credit, They both last night outrode their 4 kilo claim, and they both had 45 and 54 races or race rides between them or each. So one's had 45 and the other's had 54, and there's been no suspensions incurred. So well done to the girls. After that rocky start, they've proved them all wrong, or a few of the knockers wrong, and they've had success. And I saw them ride there last night, and they delivered a couple of peaches as well. And outrode a couple of the more senior riders, would you believe, there in Tassie last night. So well done to the two girls.
Yeah, good on them. Go get them, girls. I love that story. Because why the contemporaries are having any say in the capabilities of their colleagues within the ranks in any sport is beyond me. The people above them, coaches, managers, whoever they might be, are the ones who prepare them to be ready and mm-hmm. know when they are ready. If they are ready, they give them the tick of approval like Stephen did. It's no one else's business. Once they're given the all clear, it's play on.
And I think it's a little unfair. At the time, I felt sorry for those girls trying to start their racing careers. And of course, as jockeys go, they get better, and they've got better at every meeting. So, well done. Well done to those girls.
But as anyone goes, you start any job, Gareth. Chances are you're going to have a fleshing out period and feeling out period. Then you find your feet, and then you just go from strength to strength, hopefully, which clearly Talia and Tayo have done.
Well done, Daniel. Enjoy the rest of your day. When do the practice matches start for the AFLW side, the Carlton Football Club?
The weekend of December 18th, was it 18, 19? That weekend, I think we get a practice game. And that's the only one we get, Gareth.
That's all you need. You don't. That's the other bear bug of mine when it comes to the AFL. Forget the practice matches. Just start playing the games, and then you can have a longer season.
I don't necessarily disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think that's not a bad call.
Get rid of the practice matches. Yeah. All right, then. Thank you, Daniel.
Hey, have a great day.
You have a wonderful day, Daniel. Enjoy. You've only got one more day, then you're on holidays. Is that right?
No, next week.
Okay. You better do this show next week, then.
I'm not sure. We'll see how we go.
Yeah, all right.
Budget problems.
You've got another 10 weeks off after that. I wish I got your contract. Thank you, Daniel.
I'll ask HR. Yeah. I'll try and find HR.
Yeah.